Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. The G20 summit wrapping up in Germany with U.S. President Donald Trump meeting with British Prime Minister Theresa May. Before dawn Saturday, activists demonstrating their displeasure with the summit rioted for a second night. Hamburg police arrested at least 13 people who had stormed one building. Mr. Trump also meets with the leaders of Indonesia, Singapore, Japan, and China. And on Friday, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said that Mr. Trump put the issue of alleged Russian meddling in U.S. elections at the very top of his agenda when the two world leaders held their first face-to-face talks.
It was the most highly anticipated event of this G20 summit. U.S. President Donald Trump sat down with the Russian leader for the first time on the sidelines of the two-day gathering. The meeting was cordial, with Trump telling Putin the U.S. looks forward to, in his words, a lot of very positive things happening for Russia and for the United States. Putin told Trump he was delighted to meet him personally. Trump told Putin he was honored to meet him.
Luis Ramirez, VOA News, Hamburg.
U.S. bombers jointly with South Korean forces have conducted rare live-fire drills near the border with North Korea. That's according to the South Korean military. South Korean military said in a statement that the drill was designed to sternly respond to the series of North Korea's ballistic missile launches. The military said two U.S. B-1B Lancers deployed from Anderson Air Base in Guam, joined by U.S. and South Korean jet fighters in the eastern province, dropped weapons in a simulated destruction of an enemy ballistic missile launcher in underground facilities. North Korea carried out a test launch earlier in the week of an intercontinental ballistic missile. This is VOA News. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has named former U.S. Ambassador to NATO Kurt Volker to serve as special representative for Ukraine negotiations. The announcement comes as Tillerson moves to visit Kiev Sunday.
After sitting in on the much-anticipated meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson heads to Kiev to demonstrate U.S. support for Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko. Ukraine was among the issues discussed by Trump and Putin, but Tillerson did not disclose any details. Joining Tillerson on the trip, Kurt Volker, the new point person in negotiations to end the Ukraine conflict under the Minsk Agreement. In a statement naming Volker as the new Ukraine envoy, Tillerson said the U.S. remains fully committed to the objectives of the Minsk Agreements, a 13-point plan that starts with the ceasefire and withdrawal of heavy weapons from the front lines in eastern Ukraine and includes constitutional reforms by the Ukrainian government. I'm Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
Iraqi security forces say they're expecting to declare victory in Mosul today, which would bring an end to the Iraqi half of the Islamic State caliphate. Iraqi forces are using coalition airstrikes and ground support for the offensive to take back Mosul. The United Nations has predicted it will cost more than $1 billion to repair Mosul's basic infrastructure. The United States is arranging for an American doctor to visit China to examine ailing Chinese dissident Liu Xiaobo, who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2010 when he was imprisoned for his long and nonviolent struggle for fundamental human rights in China. 61-year-old Liu was sentenced to 11 years in prison in 2009 for what is called inciting subversion of state power after he helped write a petition known as Charter 8, that called for democratic reforms in China. In the past 5 years, terrorist attacks have killed nearly 20,000 people across Africa. Two groups, Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab, accounted for 71% of reported incidents and 91% of fatalities. But while these and other militant groups remain active, fatal terrorist attacks across the continent are on pace to fall for a second straight year, and the total number of attacks are currently running far below 2012. Highs. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions Friday visited Guantanamo Bay Prison, where the United States has been holding terrorism suspects. The Justice Department officials said that Sessions traveled to the military prison in Cuba with his deputy and director of national intelligence to understand the current operations at the facility. President Trump said during the presidential campaign that he would like to see the detention facility stay open, but has not denounced any policy of prison taking since taking office. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
The commission will sit down and find a solution and a way forward. But I think we have pronounced ourselves that we're going to appeal the decision and hope that we will get a favorable ruling on the same.
A Kenyan High Court strikes down the Electoral Commission's contract awarded to a Dubai-based company to print ballot papers for the upcoming elections.
So we had received the 6 aspirants and we went through their files, we consulted the law, and finally we came out with a list of 3 that qualified to campaign as a presidential candidate.
The Rwandan Electoral Commission disqualifies candidates ahead of next month's poll, including the only lady presidential candidate.
The main purpose for this particular thing is to tell you we have camera on board and we want to find out if we will be able to monitor the coastal boundaries of the country. The second one also is we want to introduce this technology, especially to up-and-coming generations.
And the Kennedy Space Center launches a Ghanaian student-produced satellite to the International Space Station. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, says it would appeal against a high court decision which struck down the award of contract to a Dubai-based company to print ballot papers to be used for the August 8 polls. In its ruling Friday, the court said the Electoral Commission failed to conduct adequate public participation, a move that goes against constitutional requirements. The main opposition group, the National Super Alliance, or NASA, challenged the contract awarded to the Dubai-based company. For reaction, I reach Andrew Limo, spokesman for the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
I think this is very regrettable, considering the time left to the election. But just like most of the challenges we have faced before, the commission will sit down and find a solution and a way forward. But I think we have pronounced ourselves that we're going to appeal the decision and hope that we will get a favorable ruling on the same.
But I also understand that the company that was giving the contract has begun the printing already. How does this complicate your efforts to organize credible elections this year?
We had earlier said the presidential ballot papers, the printing for that will start on 18th of July. So we had not printed. And you see, the court has made the ruling in regard to the presidential ballot papers only.
What is next for the IEBC now? Looking at these challenges, will some of these concerns expressed by people that took you to court be considered because they seem to have concerns about this particular company that they said appear to have links with President Uhuru Kenyatta, which would undermine the credibility of the election?
I think that's a matter we will leave to the courts, because in their ruling, we've been only faulted for not having public participation on the same. So that's the interpretation. The issue of whether it is associated with any of our clients, the political parties or candidates, wasn't the issue.
Apart from this court ruling, what are some of the efforts the IEBC is putting in place to meet its calendar based on the activities that you outlined recently?
It's very apparent, and anyone can see that despite the hurdles we've had, we are not the ones asking for extensions on the timelines. Because we had set timelines that were very clear, we shared with our stakeholders. And if you look at them, this is the most challenging that we have had. All the others, we have been able to find solutions, fast-track processes, and somehow we were excited that we were making very good progress. But definitely this has been a major setback. But let's cross that river when we get there. Because from the appeal, we should be optimistic that we'll get favorable ruling.
Would the IEBC, the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, have the time needed to finish the timetable that you put out to all your stakeholders, including the political parties?
Well, whatever the outcome, then definitely that would be a very rushed process. And, you know, elections and election materials need diligence, meticulous, and very, very laborious logistical arrangements. So it's going to be quite a challenge. We're having a management meeting, and these are some of the things we're going to discuss and see what ways within the law and consider options available for us, even as we anticipate a favorable outcome from the impending appeal.
What message is the IABC giving to Kenyans following this ruling?
Well, it's unfortunate that it has come to this, but all intentions and all our efforts are well-meaning. We mean well for this country, and it's just unfortunate that it's been characterized by such challenges. But I think we should be judged by how resilient we have been, that in every other situation we have been able to pull through effectively. Technology is in place, and the training is going on, the recruitment of 360 poll clerks is going on, and the training. So we've made great progress in various areas, and this is just one area that is so critical that there has been a setback. But I think we will come out of this. At the end of the day, the polling date does not change, and our focus is on the polling day. We will do everything within the law.
Andrew Limo is the spokesman for the Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. He spoke with me from Nairobi. The Rwandan National Electoral Commission on Friday disqualified three candidates for the upcoming August 4 presidential poll. The electoral body says the candidates failed to meet requirements such as collecting enough supporting signatures. Rwandans go to the polls on August 4 and will choose among long-time President Paul Kagame, Frank Habineza of the opposition Democratic Green Party, and independent candidate Philippe Mpayimana. For more on the electoral process, I reach Charles Munyaneza, the executive secretary of the Rwanda National Electoral Commission in the capital, Kigali.
We announced the final list of the candidates that are going to be campaigning for the office of the president. And normally, when we are doing that, we adhere to the law and the constitution. That's what we have been doing since we announced the provisional list on 27th of last month. So we had received the six aspirants, and we went through their files, we consulted the law, and finally we came out with a list of three that qualified to campaign as presidential candidates.
If I may ask you, who were the three who qualified, and who were those who did not meet the criteria?
The three that qualified are His Excellency President Paul Kagame, who is the incumbent, and there is Mr. Habineza Frank, who is the flag bearer for the Democratic Union Party of Rwanda, and Mr. Mpayimana Philip, who is an independent candidate. And those that were disqualified, or those that did not meet the requirements of the law, are Mr. Mwenedata Gilbert, then Mr. Barafinda Sekikubo Fred, and Ms. Rwigara Nshimiyimana Diane. Those are the three that qualified and the three that did not meet all the requirements as set by the Constitution and the electoral law.
After coming up with a list of those who qualified, what's next for the Electoral Commission? What's the next step?
The next step is that we are going forward with the electoral calendar. The next item that is going to be following is the re-election campaign that starts on 14th of July, which is a week from now, almost a week from now. So we are preparing for that, and we hope also the candidates that also qualified are also preparing for that. And, of course, we have already started putting in place the mechanism to start printing of ballot papers, which, in fact, starts tomorrow. To be precise, we start to stand because today is Saturday. And we are going to print until the 30th of July. That's according to our program.
Amnesty International came up with a statement criticizing the political climate in the country, saying that the Electoral Commission would organize elections under a climate of fear and repression. What's your reaction to that?
First of all, I've not read that report. Secondly, those people did not consult me or any other person in the Electoral Commission. So I think their report may not be balanced in the first place. So I don't know where they got the story, but what we saw on the ground is totally different from what that group of people are saying.
One of the candidates who was disqualified said that his supporters were harassed, intimidated, and all that. What do you say to that? Because he was saying that he was prevented, literally, from going through the process laid down by the Electoral Commission to get about 600 signatures or more from the 30 district to meet that requirement.
No, you know, these people have had almost 45 days of soliciting those signatures, which is a very, very long period of time. So we have been meeting them regularly. We've been meeting these people who have been collecting signatures. There are incidences where they have been airing out for some problems here and there, but we have been talking with them, but there was no formal complaint. We did not hear anybody taking a claim to police to investigate or to local government. There was nothing like that was made. So to us, we think it's not true, and we did not see anything that could stop them from getting the signatures that they were supposed to get. By the way, these are only 600 signatures out of over 7 million, close to 7 million voters. So we are failing to raise 600 signatures out of 7 million registered voters. We think that wouldn't be a very big cause for somebody to say that he or she has been disqualified because of that.
Charles Munyaneza is the Executive Secretary of the Rwanda National Electoral Commission. He spoke with me from Kigali. Ghana successfully launched its first satellite into space Friday. The satellite, which was developed by students from the All Nations University in the Ghanaian Eastern Regional Capital, Koforidua, was sent into orbit from the International Space Center. Officials of the school say the satellite project is the culmination of a two-year project costing about $50,000 with support from the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency. The project coordinator, Dr. Richard Damwa of the All Nations University, told me that the satellite will be used to monitor the Ghanaian coastline for mapping purposes, as well as to build capacity in space science and technology.
So we had some of our faculties at the communication engineering came up with this proposal, and they presented it to the president that they want to go into satellite technology. So the president of the university was also interested in it, so he sponsored three of the students to Japan. We've been working on this for a couple of years now.
What is the significance of this achievement to All Nations University and Ghana as a whole?
It's significant, especially to our country, because this is the first satellite that has been built by an institution in the country, and it has been launched into space. And so it's very significant. And so we even got a congratulatory message from the president. One of the things that actually we wanted to test is to see if we have that capability of going through all the process of satellite launching. And so the main purpose for this particular CubeSat is to test if we have camera on board, and we want to find out if we will be able to monitor the coastal boundaries of the country. The second one also is we want to introduce this technology, especially to up-and-coming generation. We want them to know that we now have the capability of this type of technology and to get their interest in space activity. So one of the things we are planning is
That was Dr. Richard Damwa, who is the coordinator of the satellite project at the All Nations University. He spoke with me from Koforidua. We apologize sincerely for the quality of the phone connection. Moving on to Zimbabwe. The Zimbabwean ruling party, the ZANU-PF, main opposition movement for democratic change led by Morgan Tsvangirai, and other opposition groups have launched their campaigns ahead of next year's elections. Incumbent and long-time President Robert Mugabe will lead his party, the ZANU-PF, in an election expected to be his last time for the 93-year-old leader. He's expected to face competition from main opposition leader and former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai. For analysis on the latest development in the campaigns, I reach Joy Mabenge of the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, an umbrella group for civil society organizations.
It seems to me everything about Zimbabweans revolves around elections. In fact, since the year about 2000, we have been in a perpetual electoral cycle. Immediately after every election, I believe the campaigning continues. Clearly, political players are now in search of the heart and soul of Zimbabweans. We've seen ZANU-PF through the president of that party and the president of the country, President Mugabe, launching the interface meetings with the young people, which has largely turned out to be meetings with ZANU-PF supporters and many other people that seemingly forced marched to those meetings. And we have also begun to see the main opposition led by Morgan Tsvangirai doing the same. But more worryingly is that opposition political parties keep on sprouting even at the 11th hour, and we begin to see how Zimbabweans are certainly going to be confused in terms of the search for the most appropriate presidential candidate as well as the lieutenants that this person will work with.
For years, Zimbabwean opposition groups have attempted to come up with a united front like a coalition. Why are they not coming together? Because not coming together, some analysts are saying, gives Robert Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party an easy path to victory.
The continued splitting of the MDC has also led to the formation of other political parties, because then Zimbabweans keep on believing that because the MDCT has contested in elections for quite a number of times and because of reasons, some of which are beyond their control, Zimbabweans are beginning to believe that it might be better to have other players come into the fore. But I believe as a political analyst that Zimbabweans' best foot forward might be a political party that has been tried and tested, that has almost on several occasions dislodged ZANU-PF. And what might be needed at this point in time is for the political parties to realize that the Zimbabwean dream that is shared by the generality of Zimbabweans can only be realized if they come together, but not only come together through a coalition. The coalition must define a political party that says that there cannot be an election in Zimbabwe unless there are serious political reforms that include but are not limited to serious electoral reforms.
There have been issues about vote rigging, vote tampering, pre, during and post-election violence and all that. Should those be included in those demands for electoral reforms? Because so far, the ZANU-PF and other political parties have resisted those calls for reforms.
You see, the resistance by ZANU-PF on those calls for reforms is affected because, as ZANU-PF says through their various mouthpieces, they have said, and I quote, "We cannot reform ourselves out of power." That's what ZANU-PF says. But we've seen throughout history that circumstances will force them to at least yield to some degree of reforms, which is exactly what happened in 2007 into 2008 throughout the formation of the inclusive government.
ZANU-PF supporters are saying that the call or the demand by opposition groups for electoral reforms is what the government has listened to and has come up with the use of biometric system of registration and being deployed during the elections. Do you think that at all could have any impact on the credibility of the upcoming elections next year?
I wouldn't say it's not going to have any impact on the credibility. But as I said, biometric voter registration is just but one component of the electoral process itself. In fact, biometric voter registration, the way we have understood it from what the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission has said, is that it is just that, biometric voter registration. It cannot be and will not be extended to a biometric voting system. Those that are interested in free, fair and credible elections must look out for other things beyond just this technical process itself. In fact, if anything, people are beginning to worry around when people have registered who is going to be manning the server, where is the server going to be sitting, who will have access to that data, what else will be used by the ruling party in terms of the data that people provide when they do this biometric voter registration process.
Joy Mabenge is a leading member of the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, an umbrella group for civil society organizations. He spoke with me from Midrand, South Africa. The G20 summit has ended in Hamburg. The meeting included talks on issues of interest to Africa, including global warming, migration, and trade and investment. It also highlighted the G20's new compact with Africa, which aims to boost investment on the continent, and the so-called Mekelle plan to improve transparency and good governance for the continent. John Stramlaw is a professor of international relations at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa. He told viewers William Eagle that the summit will be successful if the G20 succeeds in launching the African Compact and other initiatives that include carefully negotiated benchmarks for success for the continent.
It's a complicated picture, rendered more so because of Trump's lack of regard for multilateral processes and the like. But you start taking apart what would the agenda look like for the compact with Africa. On the humanitarian front, Trump has been talking more about the need to address humanitarian crises in recent days, even though his budget recommendations, and this is the alarm bell for all of these other G19 members, at least those who want to take this exercise seriously. And the G20, G19 is a mixed bag of countries, as we know, but they are responsible for 85% of the world economy and 2/3 of their people. So it's a good group to have these conversations with. And with America, you've got to figure out, well, if he's going to aid on humanitarian, fine, but he's probably not going to aid on climate change and the global the Green Climate Fund, which is essential for Africa to deal with the problems that are afflicting them from the more rapid global warming. That has to be funded absent the U.S. contribution, which was huge. I mean, it was $3 billion that Obama pledged for the first $10 billion. Trump has said no more. That means that the $1 billion stands and no more. How do you make up that deficit of the $2 billion? Is there enough resources around? Sure there is. But you have to get those countries who are and probably European, who are concerned about that. With regard to migration and immigration, the Europeans are going to step up. With regard to infrastructure, the Chinese may step up. The U.S. just can no longer be considered to be the default to go-to person to take the lead in providing lots of resources. And then you have to ask the question you're asking, Bill, about whether civil society or the private sector can step in. I mean, the compact with Africa is supposed to create an environment conducive to more private foreign investment. That's going to happen irregardless of whether Trump is there or not. But the climate is important, and the climate should have the U.S. at the table. But if the U.S. is not going to be at the table or going to be a minor player, then the others have to step up and fill that gap. And Africans are realizing more and more that they cannot no longer turn just to the default of Uncle Sam. They're going to have to figure out a way to do it themselves and work around this.
For you, what would it take for this G20 summit to be successful?
Well, you know, obviously I'd like to see the compact with Africa given appropriate prominence. I'd like to see the less attention paid to the Putin-Trump meeting, because that captivates the media attention. Where you can have a successful summit of this kind is to have these countries come together and say, look, we don't have a ready solution for Africa, but we want to launch a process, a serious process with benchmarks. And we sort of, like the climate change agreement, want to have these benchmarks negotiated carefully, and then we're going to be held to them. Let's get that process going. If this summit launched that process, Bill, then I think it was a good start.
John Stramlaw is a professor of international relations at the University of Witwatersrand. He spoke with viewers William Eagle from Johannesburg. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Love in tabula. mutima guna Nenzikiriza nebyange byonna Kugabiro mukwano guna Eno langu yangeri atapu Ni wate yoku chuse chuse kuteke teke Chogera juli Tunula mumaso gange Eno labu yangeri ya tabu Omenya menye nyingo Lava yompu zenzina Kakufono nire Ama kurangari mulaku Bitomo tapta Avono la labu Nasala wono motima guna Nenzikiriza nebyange byonna Kugabiro mukwano guna Enolabu yangeri ya tabu Ni wate yoku chuse chuse kuteke teke Mubia labu kupule pule Bitomu tapta Avunu la labu Zekuite my love
Chingale, chino tu chingale, ira tu chingale, ira tu chingale, chino tu chingale, ira tu chingale. Lava what to say, not ever make a kulo say. Makulama to know I know any mama. Mumuana Mudiana, Michawa Michova, the young one. Oh, Jeman, then I see a lot.
Don't you worry, because time's a windy.
Nanga windy. Ira tu chingale, chino tu chingale, ira tu chingale, we.
Senga, senga yambo zanga,
Jamolinga tinga na lila yoseka. Jamolinga tiyo ala langa na lamuka. Jamolinga tiyata mubia tungi sanga. Soki na pelio zala kipota na tokosa. Banda yo kenga na kuma abandoni. Rekompense na yo na kopesa na nyangu. Atana leli na nyako dorlo tema. Yangwana yebeli yote boyo mama nyondo. Elengi ya libele ya mama botangai. Ile ki barese te nyonso ya ba porto bleu kanadia. Ata mafuta tomati ezala kite. Kasi yango eleka kimusu ni lelembi. Banda yo kenda peti esilanga. Na koma koli ya kakapona sepelisa monokoye. Matea ya mamezanga bile kepe minerval. Kasi ele kibale soba metra ba profesor ba mesanga. Mama sokyo zala kitaka na bomoi. Bele na senki batia yo ministre edikasyon. Bele ba parke ba prison yo so ba kanga. Bele kutu mutu ma be azalite. Lelo na kanisi yo mingi mama. Bonjour anniversaire nanga e komine. Invité bakoli ya bakomera masanga. Yo kutu artisana ngoyo zalite. E pa yo zali sokyo kutani na okasyon e. Imbela nga karta de vœu a ta fololo. E sengo nanga e kozala multiplié fois deux. Normalement fête ya lelo e zali ya yo. Sermon d'Hippocrate ba médecin ba posalaka. Yanga ser mayo zala toujours mamananga. Ata baba neli mokili soki palazomi. Yanga ser mayo zala toujours mamananga.
Je voulais yo asakei. Ma tita lobe na Pierre Chongo. Ma apene kato na kauka. Ma tela kanga imo anama.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Douglas Impuga, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a ripened fruit does not cling to the vine. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Every year, the United States Department of State issues its annual Trafficking in Persons Report, or TIP report, which evaluates the anti-trafficking efforts of 187 countries and territories, including the United States. The report measures government efforts in prosecuting traffickers, protecting victims, and preventing the crime. Human trafficking, also known as modern slavery, is a heinous crime that happens almost everywhere and affects virtually everyone. Today, more than 20 million people around the world are victims of human trafficking. Yet globally, governments report fewer than 15,000 prosecutions and 10,000 convictions. Human trafficking is as old as humankind. Regrettably, it's been with us for centuries and centuries. But in the expression of this act, as I read that one line to you, it is our hope that the 21st century will be the last century of human trafficking. And that's what we are all committed to, said Secretary of State Rex Tillerson at the report's launching ceremony on June 27th.
The consequences of our failure to act in this area has so many other negative impacts around the world. It breeds corruption. It undermines the rule of law. It erodes the core values that underpin a civil society. Transnational criminal networks also, whether they be drug dealers, money launderers, or document forgers, are partly enabled by participating in human trafficking activities as well.
In a letter opening this year's report, Secretary Tillerson said that this year's report focuses on the responsibility of all governments to criminalize human trafficking in all its forms and to prosecute offenders as outlined by the Palermo Protocol, an international treaty on transnational crime. Because trafficking in persons is a global scourge, the United States will partner with governments, civil society, law enforcement groups, and survivors to provide help for those who need our support. Secretary Tillerson also introduced the program to end modern slavery, a new initiative that will increase funding for prosecution, protection, and prevention efforts to reduce the occurrence of modern slavery wherever it is most prevalent. The United States is a leader in the fight against human trafficking. We seek justice for victims and accountability for offenders, wrote Secretary Tillerson. We remain committed to the elimination of human trafficking here and abroad.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.